the good men gone away. The fruits of all our labors have left us as we started. We've come too far to end it in a day. Think that everything we do is wrong. I want we to know we're all alone. Look around and tell me what you see. Another stupid make of history.
No one together. No one is touching ground. Look at each other. Chaos is all around.
Same situation. Nothing is really new.
No one together. No one is me and you.
Blow the horn of plenty. It's bursting at the seams. The harvest of the world will be our prize. We claim to know the secrets, the answers have been found. But how can one fool make another wise? Nothing's better than it used to be. You live and die through a mystery. We take away and we give nothing back. We just consume it all still we lack.
No one together, no one is touching ground. Look at each other, chaos is all around.
Situation, nothing is really new.
No one together, no one is me and you.
They had to fly us so quickly now. You can feel it drawing us closer now. The signs are in the faces of the people in the streets. The signs are in the sounds I hear. The voices still bring pain and fear. You can feel it drawing near you.
All that was lost is found. New situation.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 28th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening to our live radio or another network, you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support us by purchasing the books Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of our website. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week for tonight's scriptures. We're in the, the Epistle of John, first Epistle of John, last chapter coming up now. So it's chapter 5, first Epistle of John, chapter 5. Read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 5. Whosoever believeth that Jesus is the Christ is born of God, and everyone that loveth him that begat loveth him also that is begotten of him. By this we know that we love the children of God, when we love God and keep his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. And his commandments are not grievous. For whatsoever is born of God overcometh the world. And this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith. Who is he that overcometh the world, but he that believeth that Jesus is the Son of God? This is he that came by water and blood, even Jesus Christ, not by water only, but by water and blood. And it is the Spirit that beareth witness, because the Spirit is truth. For there are three that bear record in heaven, the Father, the Word, and the Holy Ghost, and these three are one. And there are three that bear witness in earth, the Spirit, and the water, and the blood, and these three agree in one. If we receive the witness of men, the witness of God is greater. For this is the witness of God which he hath testified of his Son. He that believeth on the Son of God hath the witness in himself. He that believeth not God hath made him a liar, because he believeth not the record that God gave of his Son. And this is the record, that God hath given to us eternal life, and this life is in his Son. He that hath the Son hath life, and he that hath not the Son of God hath not life. These things have I written unto you that believe on the name of the Son of God, that ye may know that ye have eternal life, and that ye may believe on the name of the Son of God. And this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he heareth us. And if we know that he hear us whatsoever we ask, we know that we have the petitions that we desire of him. If any man see his brother sin a sin, which is not unto death, he shall ask, and he shall give him life. For them that sin not unto death, there is a sin unto death. I do not say that he shall pray for it. All unrighteousness is sin, and there is a sin not unto death. We know that whosoever is born of God sinneth not, but he that is begotten of God keepeth himself, and that wicked one toucheth him not. And we know that we are of God, and the whole world lieth in wickedness. And we know that the Son of God is come, and hath given us an understanding, that we may know him that is true. And we are in him that is true, even in his Son, Jesus Christ. This is the true God and eternal life. Little children, keep yourselves from idols. Amen. The end of the first epistle general of John.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions tonight? Or any announcements?
Well, John, because of the holiday, apparently, I have absolutely no questions for you tonight. It's going to be an easy evening for you.
Well, it depends if anybody's in the queue or not. So let's open up the queue right away, I guess.
John, I have something.
Yeah. No, let me open up the queue, though, while you're asking. Hang on a second. Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
Kathy sent an email to us asking if she might have permission to post something on Facebook. Have a look at it when you get a chance. She says she knows a lot of people through Facebook that are in the same situation she is.
Okay. Yeah, look, at anybody can post anything anywhere that's beneficial to our what we're trying to do here, or to help people and help people to learn, you know, what they need to really know. They need to know how to have government by consent, and in order to do that, you need to know our founding documents and our founding fathers and common law and how things work. But yeah, look, at I'll take a look at it, but
it's a 3-minute, 33-second clip from the Saturday course, the class we had on Saturday. So it's not open. Yeah, but anyway, like you were saying, just have a look at it, see what you might think.
Yeah, I'll take it. How did you send it to me?
In
Skype or?
She sent it to me. I think it might have come through email, through mail at NLA. I might have been added to that, or she has my address. I'm not sure exactly how, but you should have received it too, because it goes because it went to mail at NLA. But if you haven't received it,
yeah. Well, when did she send it out?
I checked it, like, and I checked it at my email about an hour ago, and then the email said it was sent 6 hours ago. So it was sent earlier today, about 7 hours ago or so.
All right. Yeah, I checked my mail maybe about that time, how long ago, so I didn't see it then. But, you know, sometimes if it's a video clip and it's too big, sometimes it just doesn't come through. You know, I used to get a lot of email with things attached, which were quite large, but they really cramp down on that and don't allow that much in the way of size going through. Drop it in Skype if you can to me. That's probably
I'll
the
try. Best way. Sure
even Skype has even Skype has reduced their size of things, but still,
yeah,
it's
I'm not sure. I'm not that technologically advanced, but anyway, I'll try. Either way,
you can just drag it and drop it into the discussion area, you know, the text area, and then you know, type something, hit enter. This way, it'll go through.
Okay. All right. I'll try it, and she thinks it'll attract a lot of people to the course, and it may well do so.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
All right. Okay, anybody wants to get into the queue? Queue's open. We only have two people in there. So anybody got a question or a comment, a correction, anything? Okay, we're going to take, is that Jose from Texas? Or someone from Texas? You got the mic.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, how you doing, John?
Good, thank you.
I have a question. Jurisdiction, who established the jurisdiction? Once I heard that you say it was a defendant with a prosecutor or the other party, and the judge have nothing to do with it. Did I hear correct?
Well, jurisdiction is established by the nature of a court. Each court has different jurisdiction. And people, you know, in certain authorities and powers have jurisdictions, authorities, and so on, particularly judges, you know. And of course, well, generally speaking, jurisdiction depends on the court that you're in as far as what we usually talk about. Now, if you're talking about another jurisdiction, you know, often we're taken into jurisdictions unknown. If you're in a town court, if you're in a village court, if you're in most city courts, you know, and you find yourself trapped there, being brought in there for one reason or another, you're in a jurisdiction unknown. They won't tell you what jurisdiction you're in. The jurisdiction that they have is equity, and equity has nothing to do with we the people. They don't get to judge those things.
So, right, that was my question. It doesn't have it have jurisdiction on the subject matter, but not on the person.
Yes, there are two jurisdictions. You're right. There's the jurisdiction on the person. That's personam jurisdiction, and there's jurisdiction on whatever it is that the subject matter, and then there's of course the jurisdiction that they have to in order to hear the case. Again, let's give a quick example. You know, talking again about town courts and village courts, their subject matter jurisdiction that they might have. Okay, they do have jurisdiction in equity.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're an individual and you're not participating in any commercial activity, or you're not an individual that's working for some government agency, then they don't have personam jurisdiction over you, which is jurisdiction over the person. So they have to have both subject matter jurisdiction and personam.
Okay. I go to a court, traffic ticket. I challenge jurisdiction. Who is, what should happen then? The judge has nothing to do with that, right?
Well, when you go into court and challenge jurisdiction, they're going to deny your challenge. I've heard many times, especially when I was trying to figure these things out myself and puzzling them, and challenge the jurisdiction. I've had judges say, well, I thought about it. I have jurisdiction. So let's get going here, that kind of thing. So,
okay.
But then you have to understand and know the law and the procedures and how process works. And the response to that is, well, wait a second here. The law requires that once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be proven now. So you got to prove it.
Right.
And you need to put it on the top of the document what jurisdiction we're in. So all courts must show what jurisdiction they have on the document, okay? And that's a problem. You know, I'm in a federal court right now. I started the case off in a state court. A U.S. attorney brought it into the federal court. I denied the jurisdiction, challenged the jurisdiction, told them they didn't have the jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they got a serious problem because the other side's got to prove that they have jurisdiction. And I did read some of their papers, and I'm saying, well, look at some of this information going forth. I forget how I actually worded it, but, you know, the communications between the two sides. We're seeing that it appears that maybe we're under USC 26. Is that the jurisdiction? And I had written that to one of the individuals that, was in the lawsuit. And, because they were claiming they had jurisdiction. But they haven't answered that yet. And the thing is no matter what they come up with, they don't have jurisdiction. And, the court does have certain jurisdictions over individuals, but it's very, very rare. It's not that much. Almost all the time, federal courts do not have jurisdiction over the people. So there's very few situations where they can, take a jurisdiction. You know, as far as the people are concerned in a federal court, the jurisdiction in a federal court is really to protect your rights. So it's called, for cause. So if you move mm-hmm. to federal court for cause, and the cause is some kind of a violation of one of your unalienable rights, and that's a cause to go into the federal court and to seek an order for the lower court or whatever it is that you're in to cease and desist. And at the same time, you've been injured. They deny you of due process. Those courts cannot give you due process. So they denied you of due process, so you can seek damages for that. Stress and time, pressure, all kinds of things, depending on, how much involvement you're into that. Again, you can seek damages for that. So you can get those damages from the federal court plus a cease and desist order.
Okay. I understand that jurisdiction can be challenged at any time anywhere in the process, even in appeals.
Yes, you can challenge jurisdiction any time. You could be in the middle of a trial and come to realize, wait a second, you guys don't have jurisdiction, and deny it. If you even get through the trial and then convicted and maybe had to serve a jail sentence, and you come out and you realize, wait a second, that court didn't have jurisdiction.
Right.
You can go back and seek damages and everything else. They did something that's an injury, a huge injury in that case, isn't it? So jurisdiction can be challenged at any time.
Okay. I have another comment. Here in Texas, usually the traffic ticket says in the top, the state of Texas against the person, the name. And when you go to that court, the guy representing the state of Texas is a municipal attorney. And by law, nobody can represent the state of Texas except the county attorney. So that's this is not a question. This is just a comment to have in mind. Hey, who can represent the state of in a traffic ticket? It has to, you know, a traffic court. It has to be somebody that the law allows him to represent the state there.
That's correct. Yeah, has to be an officer of the court.
When you have a judge paid by the city and a lawyer paid by the city, it's nothing short of fraud, or it's what the federal law calls. There's a name for that. I forgot the name. But they both pay for the city, and they're against your rights. You know, they're going against your rights.
Right.
So, just a comment.
Well, that is a sense of a fraud, and there is what's called fraud on a court, and only an officer of the court can commit fraud on a court, and generally it requires two individuals to participate in that, but not necessarily so. And but that situation is not necessarily fraud on a court, but there is such a thing. The problem, of course, is, look, if you go into a court, if the people aren't deciding, then you're in the wrong court, and they have no jurisdiction over you. It's really that simple.
Yeah.
And the people deciding is called the jury. And if you're being drawn in there criminally, well, first they have to get permission from the people to take you in. Unfortunately, juries, I don't know if there are any grand juries that are truly brought together in such a fashion that they're liberated and able to really make decisions properly and aren't really controlled by, you know, usually the prosecutor. Prosecutor has no power and no authority to really go before a grand jury. Never in history has that happened. It's always either been the sheriff or the coroner, and in some rare cases, the people. But nowhere in history does it show that an officer of the court is to address a grand jury. And in the federal level, that didn't happen until the early 1970s, 71, 72, where they wrote legislation for the authority for the U.S. attorneys to call and address a grand jury. But we, the people, never gave them that authority, nor can we. You see, the authority for the grand jury and for the trial jury isn't necessarily found in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. Well, to a degree, anyway. There is you've got the fifth, I think it's the fourth, fifth, and the fifth, sixth, and the seventh, I think, all focus in to some degree on the jury. So there is the authority of the jury, but it doesn't get into the details. If you want to understand the way things work as far as the jury is concerned, the powers and the authorities and so on and so forth, you really go back in history. There has been some United States Supreme Court rulings, U.S. Versus Calandria, U.S. versus Williams. Those are two cases where it talks about the power and the authority of the grand jury, and I think to some degree even also the trial jury, I don't remember, but I know the grand jury is heavily covered, particularly in the U.S. versus Williams. So you'll have some good judges in the past when they obeyed the law, at a time when they seem to have obeyed the law, that they've written some good decisions and made clear the power and the authority of the jury and where it comes from, where it's founded.
Okay. I appreciate your answers.
Okay. All right, thank you. And your name is Jose, right?
Yeah, I'm Jose.
All right.
Yeah. Thank
you. Okay, thanks a lot. By the way, there's no one else in the queue. There's only one other person, so if anybody wants to hop in there, she was open. Next question. Cynthia, you got the mic.
Aloha, John.
Aloha.
Cynthia Joe here. I did email a question to questions@National Liberty Alliance like 3 hours ago, but I guess I'll read it. I don't know if I'll do as good a job as Jan, but
well, I'm a horrible reader myself, so but go right ahead.
Okay, so there are two brew pub restaurants in our county who are refusing to take cash. We have to argue with them to take cash. they want to insist on credit cards or some sort of, you know, other electronic methods of payment. And we're wondering, so when we're done with your course, is that a lawsuit that we could pursue with them?
I don't know the answer to that. That's a good question. You know, it's interesting. It's a restaurant, you're saying?
Yeah, it's a restaurant, and they
give go in there and eat, and if they don't want your cash, then, hey, you know, I don't have credit cards, maybe, or I don't use debit cards or whatever. See what they say. I'm sure they're going to take your cash.
They finally take the cash, but it's like this huge argument, and it's two different restaurants that are here in our county, and it's happened to several people, and it is this huge argument, and they don't, you know, they don't want to believe that we don't have any other method but cash. It's a really amazing when it should be no big deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, nothing but gold or silver should be accepted as legal tender. That's what the Constitution says. And, of course, unfortunately, the cash is not backed up by, gold or silver. But I think you could say that coins are. Even though coins don't have anything of value inside of it, they're guaranteed by the United States government and the Treasury, shall I say, which, again, is the United States government anyway. But that's a guarantee. And the interesting thing about coins is that it follows the inflation. It's still if you take a quarter is a quarter. It's the value that's given to that quarter, and that moves around literally on a daily basis, depending on the value of gold and silver. You know, everything's constantly just moving around, slowly maybe, or sometimes very fast. So the interesting thing about that is that's why I suggest to people, you know, especially people who can't afford to go out and buy gold and silver, keep your coins. I mean, I often go out and buy boxes of the halves, which is the half dollars. Now, sometimes you'll get a silver coin in there, and it's got some copper in it and different things. But again, the face value is guaranteed by the United States government, number one. The dollar is not. That's a debt note by the Federal Reserve. So again, you know, getting boxes of coins is probably a good way to, you know, protect yourself for the future, because when the collapse finally comes, it's not necessarily going to be able to be exchanged per se with a good value when the total collapse comes. You don't hold on to it, because after that point, at some point in time when things settle and a new system set up, which will be gold and silver, because Trump has already set that in motion, and it's going to take a little time, I'm sure, between that and the other thing happening. So then at that point, your quarter will be worth a serious, let's say if you got a silver, let's say you have a half a dollar coin. You can't find the silver, you know, the full dollar coins anymore. They give you this tiny little coin that they make look like gold or something, but whatever. Some of them look like silver. But, let's say you have a dollar with nothing but maybe a little bit of copper or whatever. It'll take 20 of those dollars to equal an ounce of gold. An ounce of gold right now, I know, is over $2,000, I hear. So, and it's going to go higher and higher. Silver might even overtake the gold. And if you have a lot of silver at the time of that collapse, and silver overtakes gold, you're going to want to take your silver and probably turn it into gold, because eventually it'll even back out again. But that's only because of what's available, you know.
On that note, about a year ago, my husband had one of those big 5-gallon water jugs full of coins, so we dumped them out on
a lake. Oh, okay. Don't throw them away. Go ahead.
Yeah, and we have the granddaughter's. We separated all the quarters out, and we were looking for 1964 or before, because those are real silver. And they have, I think out of this whole huge jug, I mean, we found one or two actual silver coins, because, you know, they've been pulling them out and then selling them as silver. So back to the restaurant. is it lawful for them to refuse cash? And how is that something that can be pursued through, you know, making a lawsuit and having an injunction?
Well, the debt note, okay, which is your dollar bill, okay, it's said that it is for legal tender. So ultimately, they can't refuse it, okay? And they will take it because at some point you got to leave the restaurant. Hey, I got to go. Do you want a tip? You know, I mean, whatever. The thing is, if they, you know, I got to go. You know, so what are you going to do? You know, that's the bottom line. I mean, worst comes to worst, you call the sheriff. You know, but again, it doesn't seem like it's that big a deal. I wouldn't be looking to make a mountain out of it, and you know. Ignorance is out there too, you know. So
yeah, well, just the whole, you know, being not able to.
I don't understand their thinking and why they're thinking that way. I noticed recently where I go shopping, you know, Stop and Shop. It's a local Stop and Shop, not too far, so I go there. And I noticed recently because it's been a while since I used cash myself. I mean, I do use cash from time to time, but it's been a while since I used cash in a grocery store. And I did use it recently, and they wouldn't take the money. And they said, no, you got to deposit it down there. They had a little slot where you put the dollars in and it, you know, takes the money in and gives you your change and so on and so forth. And I never noticed that before. It's something recent, and I don't know what that's all about. But as far as, well, I guess it prevents anyone from robbing the cash register to some degree, too. So maybe that's a problem. But, yeah, I don't understand the logic and the reasoning behind not accepting cash. I just don't. There must be something there.
Hey, John, it could be. They might not want to handle the cash because of COVID. Yeah, because of germs and such. But in Atlanta, I lived in town, fortunately got out, still not far enough out, but in the suburbs. But anyway.
Bring a can of Lysol with you. Go ahead.
I'm sorry?
Bring a can of Lysol.
Exactly, a can of Lysol. Yeah. Their argument in town is because of the crime. And so it is a legitimate argument, but my problem with it, you know, and again, you're right about the ignorance, but my problem with it, and as opposed to defending themselves, what do? They move further from the Constitution, and they take a limp-wristed, lily-livered way out, and they say, we're not going to do actual physical money anymore because we'll just do digital. We can't get robbed for digital. So that's one of the arguments.
Well, there are two things they could do. Number one, they can get a safe and put a you know, a little slot and put a sign up there. We only hold X amount of cash, you know, less than $100 of cash at any given time. Other than that, it's in the safe, and we don't have the combination. The other solution to that is a pistol.
Yeah,
exactly. But see, these are a bunch of libs, and they're not going to protect themselves, and there is some pretty serious crime in Atlanta. And people have, at restaurants, have been murdered. I worked in restaurants for years, and so.
And I bet they have really strong gun laws, but go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can't. A friend of mine, my neighbor, he got hit by a car on his motorcycle. He's got some very interesting stories, this fellow. I could take up some time with him, but he got hit by a car at the intersection right next to where we live. And the cop came, dig this, spent the whole time trying to take his gun. He didn't care at all to find out who had hit him at all. And the only reason his gun, he was in pretty bad shape. The only reason he got to keep his gun is because the paramedic knew the Constitution. The paramedic in the ambulance, he's the one that said, you can't take his gun. But that's what the cop tried to do the whole time in the City of Atlanta cop. So anyway.
You guys have sheriffs, I hope?
Yeah, we have a sheriff. I think the last one before the current one, I think he was former FBI, and the current one might be FBI too, so they're probably of little to no use.
Well, hopefully, well, that's why you need to know your sheriff. And people have to visit their sheriff, find out who they are and what they believe in. Are they going to protect you with the Constitution, so on and so forth. You know, again, you know, our sheriff died here, but his under sheriff took control And so he's the sheriff, and he thinks a lot like the old other sheriff anyway. But, you know, everybody should know their sheriff, get somewhat of a relationship, and that's where the committee of safety comes in. That's where you can really make your connection. But other than that, you should have your sheriff's phone number in on speed dial in your phone. Because any problem or any situation, I remember during COVID numerous times people were upset with me because I didn't wear the mask. I mean, some places I did because I just didn't want to start the trouble, but I wouldn't wear it any more than a few minutes. I went into the grocery store, I'm just not wearing the mask because I'm shopping, you know. And numerous times people, you know, complained, yeah, you better put on a mask, this, that, and the other thing. I'm going to call a cop, blah, 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 blah. I said, well, you call the cop and I'll call the sheriff. And I just kept shopping, you know. They never called the cop anyway. I had people trying to throw me out, and they said, well, you know, we're going to call the cops. I said, same thing. I say the same thing, you know. So if I see him going over toward the phone, I'm going to call the sheriff, you know. But people should have that. They should know you should know your sheriff, whether he's going to keep up on the Constitution, whether he's going to protect your unalienable rights. You know, one of the interesting things about New York, we have 62 counties. Now, we've lost sheriffs in 7 counties, which is something, you know, we're going to do something about that, just not right now. Now is not the time to make that fight. But out of that 62 counties, that brings us, what, down to 55 counties. Out of the 55 counties, all of them having sheriffs in them, only 2 sheriffs in the entire, and I think it was actually one, but I think it may have been 2. Only 2 sheriffs out of all of those got together. I mean, all the sheriffs except for those 2 got together and agreed that they were not going to allow the governor and the legislator, New York legislator, make any decisions to take control of the gun permits away from the sheriffs and give it to the state police. And they all rejected. They refused to give them the list of all the people with the guns. And they said it was unlawful and unconstitutional. Even though the law still sits, the sheriffs sit with the control over that. So it's kind of surprising at a New York state that you'd have that many sheriffs that realize this thing on the Second Amendment.
Right. Well, and circling back to what we were saying, or you were both saying about protection, guns and money and protection, I think my concern too is I know 2 people who lived in China for a while, Americans, and they watched the society move into a cashless society, where then they, you know, they control people. Accounts, and so that's, I think, a big concern.
Well, yeah, you know, now that I think about it, you're right, because, you know, I'm aware of the plan on how the communist and the socialist ultimately work, and they're really heading for, goodness, what is it called? It's, socialism. That's where they're heading for, is socialism. So you got the communism and Nazism. And they could be very violent, and they will take control of violent. And in order to bring the people into subjection, they'll literally kill millions of people. We've seen this in the 20th century. And I think it's something like 250 million people have been killed in the 20th century by their own government. And it's always the case, the first thing they do is to disarm them if they're armed. But... once that kind of settles down, they control those people who don't obey them by controlling their money system. And that's, I think, where they're heading, of course, is the control of money, because with one flip of switch, they could take all your money right out of the bank and it's done. You go and you have nothing in there because, you know, everything is running electronically. And anybody who feeds you or helps you, okay, well, they get punished too. And that's a way of control. That's part of their plan.
Yep, because this one gentleman, he lived in China for 18 years teaching English, and he said he saw, like, all the cash go away, and let's say you were at a farmer's market or an open-air market, each vendor would have a T-shirt on with their QR code, and in order to pay, you would just, you know, take your phone and you get their QR code, and then that would take you into their account where you would deposit money. And he said it was very, you know, alarming. And
maybe that's why the Obama phones are out there, huh?
I'm just saying, I don't like QR codes. I know that they're all about tracking. So anyway, it's just kind of interesting. I wanted to see what, you know, and I encourage everybody to use cash as much as possible. We've tried to go to all cash as much as, you know, with most everything, and write checks still, and try not to use that system just to be rebels.
Well, again, we do have our constitution. Unfortunately, they don't obey it, but our constitution clearly says only gold and silver is accepted as legal tender, period, end of subject. And that's why we have to get back to that. You know, look, at that wisdom comes from the Bible. Our founding fathers found that wisdom and realized the necessity of doing that.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go to our next caller. Again, if anybody wants to get into the queue, we only have two more people in the queue. We'll take our next person. Ross, how you doing? You got the mic.
Yeah, John. If I want to start...
Hey, back off your mic a little bit. You're coming in really loud. So put your mic a little bit away.
You can't hear me?
No, I can hear you. You're coming in loud. I'll just lower my volume. Go right ahead.
I should do before to do the very first meeting for the seminar stuff.
What, something about the seminar, what?
The first meeting, before doing the first meeting for the seminar.
Right.
Office.
Okay, what do you want to know about it?
I was just saying, what should I do before that?
Well, you want to make sure you're partnering with a couple of people, and I would say you don't want to do your first seminar till you maybe have at least a half a dozen people together, kind of making the plans and coming together and then putting it together, you know, and you put your heads together between you, and you know, you'll figure things out. But if you go to Start a Committee of Safety and come down and click on the handbooks, videos, and tools, and you scroll down the pages here, one of the things you'll find here, it says your Committee of Safety Seminar Instructions, Videos, and PowerPoint videos. And you just read through here, you know, and we give you all the all the things you need. You know, this will follow pretty much the layout of the plan that we put together on our seminar on our front page. For instance, if you click on the Star Spangled Banner like you never heard it before, you know, that pops up there, and again, you know, you can play that. That's a good one to start off with. And then our Founding Fathers and Committees of Safety, this is 31 minutes long. You play this, and after that you take a break, and so on and so forth. Then again, we have after that, we have a Committee of Safety presentation, 35 minutes long. And you take a 15-minute break with a Q&A, a little bit of a discussion. And then you go for the second half, which is some more videos, and then you'll have time after that, maybe an hour for having conversation, Q&A. And you do the best you can to answer questions. You know, some questions may come and you don't answer, and that's okay. Look, we're working it out, we're figuring it out, but we're going to get that answer for you. And if you go through all of the things we have here on this particular page, which is all of the tools, the handbooks, the documents, the videos, the PowerPoints, all set up, you know, everything is there, lots of tools. But if you have a question and you can't get an answer, you know, you can always come to the Monday night meeting and ask here. And if we don't have the answer, we'll find the answer for you also. Bring it back to them on the next meeting. But anyway, this is laid out for the first meeting right here. And after that, we have the monthly meeting protocol, okay? Let me just read through this a little bit. I think it'll be helpful. We don't have too many people in the queue anyway. We only have one other person. So, you know, monthly meeting protocol. Meeting should be monthly, duration about 2.5 hours. You should stay on point. We suggest you go from 7 to 9:30 p.m. Meeting should be proceed as follows. Start learning the Robert's Rules of Order as soon as you can, because it will be needed when you grow. At some point in time, you're going to need that. And it doesn't take long to figure out how simple the Robert's Rules of Order is, and it'll work out eventually, so no big deal. Let me continue. Number one, we strongly suggest that the meeting not be on a Monday night because it conflicts with NLA meetings, and it is important. We're going to try to have a monthly meeting with just committee of correspondence. So one person from every committee of safety hopefully come together to discuss, so we can discuss and come up with ideas for national issues and even state issues. You have a sign-in sheet, name, town, phone number, email. Open the meeting with a Bible chapter or a prayer. I prefer Bible chapters. Do the Pledge of Allegiance. Pass the donation can or collect dues as everyone is introducing themselves, maybe 5 minutes of that. Read the minutes of the last meeting. And, of course, you should have a secretary there or someone that's going to take the minutes and put it into the record. And of course, a good idea is to record. They should record the meeting, and then it's easy for them to keep up with it. They'll have all the information, and they can write good minutes. Anyway, subcommittees reports on the progress is the next thing you do. The general committee's new business tasks to be performed to the subcommittees. Maybe you talk about ideas and come to conclusions, solutions, whatever. Download a video from this page and watch and discuss it. Close the meeting and encourage everyone to bring a guest in the next meeting. Thank the people for coming, announcing the date and of the next meeting. Remind the people to visit National Liberty Alliance and to get a proper education. And then we have a list of things. Have members bring guests, invite friends, neighbors, and coworkers, invite volunteers, professionals, fire departments, invite volunteer professional or ambulances, invite volunteers or professional rescue, invite homeschoolers, invite meetup groups, invite liberty groups, invite gun groups, invite veteran clubs, post invitations in bulletin boards and stores, colleges, Craigslist, etc. Invite your sheriff and other elected individuals from your political subdivisions. Encourage the people in surrounding counties to organize their counties by inviting them to your meeting. And then here's the different subject matters you can discuss. And we have topical stuff on all this. We have PowerPoints, videos, written materials, everything. You want to talk about the committeemen at one point. One day you want to talk about jury administration. Another day on common law, equity, grand jury, petty juries, militia, republic review, founding documents, American heritage, how to approach the sheriff and organize the posse comitatus. And then, again, there's lots of videos here. Download videos for the county meeting. And there's PowerPoints here. There's memorandums. You can read a memorandum and discuss it, a memorandum of law. Every town should build one of these, I don't know how to pronounce that, a Quarapini? In any event, it's really for growing fruits and vegetables, ultimately out of water. It's interesting on the different kind of nursery we have here, for like a nursery here that you put together. Interviewing candidates is a conversation. Stop calling us a democracy, a conversation. American Bar Association must be banned for treason. You know, all these things, it's just tremendous amount of information on this page. And this is the stuff that the committees of safety need to get involved with. They need to run a certain protocol to cover the business at hand in their counties, and they need to work on education, and they need to encourage people to come to National Liberty Alliance to get an education, and we need to have at least one member from every committee of safety on the first Monday of the month where we discuss just issues and come up with ideas and solutions, and they bring that information back to their committee and discuss on how they're going to deal with that problem or participate with that problem, and so on, you know? So anyway, lots of stuff.
How about we should do like two-thirds of the county?
I'm sorry, two-thirds of the county what?
Like, okay, two-thirds of Clackamas County's population.
Okay. Right? Yeah, but I'm missing something. You're saying two-thirds of the county's population? What are you talking about, dude?
From the community safety.
Oh, well, it'd be great if you can get two-thirds of the county population to come. I mean, that'd be outrageous, but I doubt you'd get that many people that interested. Your committees of safety could easily run into 1,000 people after a year or two, or even more, or even less. You know, but it depends on how active you are and how really you work towards trying to grow the committee of safety. But once the word gets out, one of the nice things about the free and independent committees of safety, and opposed to the committeemen that is controlled by statutes and party bosses, they're limited. My county only permits 149 committeemen, one for each election district. And but if in a free and independent committee of safety, where the committee men could be as many, we can have 1,000. It doesn't matter. We take everyone in. It's an unalienable right to participate in government by consent, and that's what the committee of safety is doing, participating in government by consent. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So is there another question there, Ross?
No, that's it.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's take. We only have one other person in the queue, and I don't necessarily have a subject that I can think of to be talking about. Need some questions to run some answers or whatever. Let's take our next person, our last person in the queue right now. John, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Hey, John, can you hear me?
Yeah, we may be talking for a while. Go ahead.
The lady from Hawaii was talking about going to a restaurant that didn't take cash. I mean, for them, I guess I understand why she was concerned about it, but they can always vote with their feet and just go someplace else.
Well, that too, yes, I agree. Yeah.
And the other thing about...
that's not convenient for them either, you know.
Right.
Like, the sad thing is not many people would do that. Because we've all been kind of tuned in on using these debit cards. I'll tell you, I remember when they first came out many, many years ago, and I thought they were the greatest thing because you didn't have to carry cash and so on and so forth, and it was very convenient, and that's the problem. You know, we fall into that trap of convenience, and we don't realize there's really a really sick plan behind this whole process.
Right, right. Well, one thing about... you were talking about that, it was legal tender. You know, legal tender, I believe, is an equity term. I mean, all that means is if you look at the your Federal Reserve notes, it says legal tender for all debts, public and private. It doesn't say in payment of all debts, it says for all debts. In other words, you're replacing that debt with another one.
Well, that's true, yeah. The person with the most dollars at the end of the day when the total collapse comes is the one that loses the greatest.
Right.
Holding the greatest debt. And they lose it all.
Well, it's true, but I mean, you're saying that there's the difference between legal tender and lawful money. Lawful money is gold or silver,
right.
And that's the only thing that's enforceable in the state for paying a debt is lawful money or gold or silver.
Right.
Legal tender is you know, you're bartering. It's basically you're bartering with IOUs is what you're bartering with. I mean, in any restaurant you can go in there, you can if they'll accept coffee beans for your beer or whatever like that. I suppose that's a barter too. I mean,
the bartering is okay, but you know, at least the general idea of legal tender is gold and silver. But you're absolutely right. Bartering is a great way to go. Government doesn't like that at all because they can't tax that. They have a problem trying to tax that. I remember there was a big thing in town not long ago, some years back. Where they wanted to collect taxes on people that do yard sales. I mean, well, how are you going to calculate that? How are you going to really run that? I mean, who in their right mind is even going to say what they've collected? And you don't really get much at a yard sale anyway, you know. Spend all day out there and you get a few dollars. But, you know, what is also legal tender is, for instance, Kennedy's silver certificate. So as long as the dollar bill, that paper, is valued, whatever it is in gold or silver, it's got to be backed. So we got to get back to the original, relationship between gold and silver, where silver, 20 silver coins, which is $20, is equal to 1 ounce of gold, one gold coin. That's the ratio, the relationship. And in that kind of a ratio, that kind of a relationship and the value, the power of that money that you get for every, you really get your a good bang for the dollar, so to speak, you know. I just remember back in the 50s and the 60s how cheap things were. Today it's just insane. And even just recently, every week it seems like everything's getting more and more expensive. So it's getting pretty bad out there.
Well, it's like making soup. If you had Campbell's soup, you put in one thing of soup and one thing of water. You want more soup, put in three cans of water. That's the same thing, right?
Well, that's the other thing. They raise the prices and they reduce the amount in the box or the can. Potato chips has been doing that. All these different chips and stuff have been doing that for a long time. It's more air than anything else, you know. So it's kind of crazy. I know eggs is like $6-$7 out here, you know. I mean, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, how do you see this? When do you see this collapsing? I guess that's my question. It has to collapse, but I mean, are we talking weeks?
It's going to come soon. Look, at it. It has to do with a couple of things, I think. I mean, it's got to get so bad I think if violence starts to hit the streets, and that might be something to really click things off for the military to make the move. That's one possibility, I guess. We're heading towards a world war, nuclear war, no less. And Trump keeps warning us. Other people keep warning us. And he's going to step in and fix that. And maybe that'll be the end deal. The other thing is there's a lot of information coming out. Durham, the information that Durham has put out, the report, quote unquote, the report, and it wasn't just the report that he was out there. The report is what he's releasing. That's what they kept talking about, and that's what they're looking for. Then there's a lot of big things that took place in that report, but the mainstream media isn't even addressing it. So, again, the information still has to get out to the people. It's got to get out in different ways, and it does through the Internet, different social medias, for instance, and also alternative news. It's getting out there. But eventually people are picking up on it. I'm hearing there's quite a few people. Here's in the 60% margin somewhere in there. The people are really kind of getting their eyes opened. I talk to people who never paid attention to anything, and they're talking about there's a problem with the government and the news is fake. I mean, so it's getting out there. So that's an important part. But there's got to be a dump at some point of news. I mean, real serious things. All the pedophilia is going on with all of these individuals as far as slave sex going on, the transport of slaves and the moves of sex slaves. And that's something that's going to dump out. It's coming out little by little. It's going to get greater and greater. And what's really going on? It's just being exposed, but it's just taking time. And I don't think the military can make that move until enough people, really see it. There'll always be, the people that just are just brain dead and don't see anything. And I guess that'll always be there. But in any event, I don't know when it is. I'm kind of was hoping it'd been over by now, and I don't see it going to 2024, but maybe it will.
Right.
I don't know. Survival is really tough,
Right. I've talked to a lot of people. One other question I hear asked often is, or comment made anyway. People don't believe there's going to be somebody charging in on a white horse, whether it be Trump or anybody else. The sheriff can save us. We've got to save ourselves. What do you say to somebody like that? I mean, do you really believe that Trump is going
to be? Unless they're it's hard to believe that that there's any way out of the mess we're in.
Right.
I really, some years back, before Trump, pre-Trump, okay, I thought the only way out of this was at the end of a barrel of a gun. That was it, and I was preparing for that. And nobody wants to go that route, but, when you have to defend yourself, you have to defend yourself. The problem, of course, if you're the first person they come after, and at some point when people realize that they're coming out after you, at least at that point, then people feel more comfortable in defending themselves. So it's difficult, especially in the beginning. But anyway, I thought that was going to be the only way out of here. I didn't see any other way. But when Trump was running for office, I started to get some hope because, we've heard about Trump here in New York, and we know his political views and so on and so forth. At least people were paying attention. So I had a lot of hope. And I didn't know how much Trump really understood. And after a few years of him being in there, I started to realize more and more that he understands a lot more than I thought he might have. He knew that 9/11 was an inside job. He knew that the government took down the Twin Towers. He knew what was going on. He and Mayor Giuliani at the time, when this happened, they both knew what was going on. He didn't realize at point at the beginning. But once that building fell, Trump knew, and they already suspected some things. And then you look into the things. He knew that President Obama was not a citizen of the United States. He wasn't a natural born citizen. His father was never a citizen of the United States. In order to be a natural-born citizen, both parents have to be citizens at the time of your birth. That's where it begins. You know, if you know, they talk about McCain. McCain's parents were both natural-born, you know, both citizens of the United States when he was born. And his father was in the service and he was overseas. And they tried to make a thing about this, not that he was a good guy anyway, but in any event, they tried to make a thing about it, claiming that he couldn't be president because he wasn't born in the United States. Well, that was ridiculous. He was born to two people and his father was in the service and they happened to be overseas. It's a ridiculous idea or thought. But that was some of the claim that was being made by the Democrats. And yet, what's up with this natural born? Nobody seems to remember what natural born citizen means. But it's an individual born to two parents who are citizens at the time of their birth. That's it. And clearly Obama was not that, as far as the propaganda was concerned, you know?
Well, yeah. I sometimes wonder about somebody charging on a great white horse, whatever you want to call it, to save
the Lord. The Lord's coming, parabolically speaking, you know, in a parable, you know, great white horse, but in any event, he'll come in the clouds of glory.
Right. Well, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know.
you believe in Trump, you know, and I want to believe in Trump. Sometimes I wonder, though. It's so controlled. It's almost beyond us. I swear.
Well, you know, the more time you spend exploring, listening, and looking, and focusing in on whatever it is you're looking at, then the more faith and belief and hope that you get. I have great hope and great faith in what's going on. And it's not Trump alone, okay? It's the military. And the military has been concerned about this since the assassination of Kennedy. And they didn't know what to do back in those days. They just didn't know what to do, you know? And they knew. This is what I've recently heard. They knew. But... you know, we've come a long way since then, and again with Trump's presidency, that was key.
Right. Yeah. Well, I remember when Kennedy was elected, and I was in third grade at that time, and yeah, it was, you know, the nuns came in with the TVs, and everybody said a prayer, and but I mean, I didn't know what to think back then, but you know, the more I read about him, the more I convinced he was on our side.
Yeah, when he was assassinated, you said
right.
Yeah, I was in the third grade too, and yes, I remember being in school. It was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We had just finished lunch, and we were back in session in class, and then it came over the loudspeaker, and that's exactly what they did: said a prayer, and everybody was set home early.
Right. And Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King. I mean, it's interesting. Martin Luther King, he was practicing and telling everybody you want to be judged by your character and not by the color of your skin. And they went 180 degrees opposite right now. You know, it's mm-hmm. unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, hey, look, you know, all these people were killed by lone, crazy, assassins. And of course, nothing is further from the truth. All the assassinations have always been planned by the deep state, well, by the powers that be, you know, the New World Order, ultimately. And it doesn't matter what country you're in. They always kill the good guys. Anybody going up bucking against them. No. Anyway, they tried to kill Jackson, okay? It's strange about Jackson because the guy had two guns and fired them both. He fired one, it misfired, and fired the other one, and that didn't fire either, and the story goes is he beat him with his cane as he ran away, you know? So,
right.
And later on, some years later, you know, it was revealed somehow, I remember reading about this, that it was, this guy was, you know, working for the ultimate, the powers that be at the time, you know? It was assassination planned by the elite. You know, they had to get rid of Jackson. He was a problem. You know, had to get rid of Kennedy. He was a problem. They were looking to take him down.
Yeah, well, I don't believe anything I hear in the news media, especially, and I think that pretty much nothing is what it seems. That's nothing is what we've been taught. I mean, it's It would be really interesting to really find out what the truth is eventually, what's going on behind the scenes, because we sure as heck don't know it.
It's going to be a big reality change, a big reality check. And, we've been living in a fiction, living in a fantasy world, and you're exactly right. Nothing is the way it seems. You know, reality is the way one perceives it, you know, generally speaking, and everybody perceives it differently to some degree. But as far as understanding what's going on in the world, we're fed whatever they feed us.
We eat all of it, too.
Yeah. I don't believe any of it anymore. But I don't know what to believe either, to some degree either, you know? So, anyway. You got anything else, John?
That's all. Thank you. Keep on keeping on, and thank you for your leadership.
Okay, I appreciate the call.
All right.
Okay, let's take Bob. LeBrew, is that the next question? What state you're from, by the way, Bob? And there's nobody else in the queue, so I don't have anything to talk about particularly tonight. So hopefully other people get in the queue and give us something to talk about. Bob, you got the mic. But you
great.
Still...
I hope you can hear me okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. I just got to say again, I just love listening and learning from you. You know, the simplicity of your natural-born citizen argument was the best that I've ever heard, and I've been delving into that.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that. I had a list of about 9 questions.
Well, we've got time. There's nobody else here, so go right ahead.
Well, no, that was from last week, and I lost it, and I said, thank you, Lord. You probably kept me from making a fool of myself. But anyway.
Well, we need a fool now.
Well, you got the guy. So one of the things I remember was the National Center for Constitutional Studies that you had a question about. There's a guy, Jeremy Nelson is the guy that always answers when I order more constitutions. And I've probably gotten like 9 cases from him over the last 8 or 9 years, and best place.
They got great prices on books. They got great deals.
Yeah, it's gone. It's no longer a dollar, but it's you know, it's the best deal you can get. But the one I prefer is the one that puts the Declaration first, because that was our first law. We had a guy running for governor, and he set his up. He got him from NCCS, and they put a cover on it for him. But he made sure that the Declaration was the first thing when you opened the cover. So I still...
Well, the Declaration of Independence is the foundation of our law. Everything
right.
We are, who we are as a people, is built upon that foundation.
Yeah. So if anybody orders constitutions from NCCS, they might bring that up to see if they can get their... with the Declaration first, because it's buried behind everything else if you just get the normal...
I'm looking at one right now. I've bought quite a few constitutional handbooks from them, and they were very, very inexpensive. You know, I bought hundreds at a time, and I'm looking at it right now, and at least I got the older one. It starts off with the Constitution. And then after that, it's the Bill of Rights and all the amendments, and then the Declaration of Independence. But they do have on the covers, you know, the front cover and the back cover page, they have a lot of great quotes, George Washington, Jefferson quotes, Federalist, Alexander Hamilton quotes, a lot of great quotes in here, you know?
Yeah, and one of the things that I really like about what they have is... on the last page, inside the back cover, it talks about the Constitution Week law, and our now Senator Brian Hughes was responsible for getting that passed when he was a representative in 2004.
What was it? What was it he got passed? Something Constitution what?
It's the Constitution Week law.
Oh, okay.
And I guess when he passed it in Texas, it was constitutional here because I think states can pass laws like that. But Robert Byrd heard about it and promptly made it national. It's a national law that every school that gets federal money, which is basically all of them, except maybe Hillsdale and who knows what, but...
well, all schools, I think, get some benefit, but go ahead.
Is to have a program on the Constitution, and I interpret that as a real program on the Constitution, and not...
Well, there is a legislation on the federal level, I understand, that requires anybody that gets money, you know, education-wise for school, that they must teach civics, and but they're not obeying that. They're teaching communism or some kind of an ism in there. Certainly aren't teaching civics. I mean, these people have... I've seen college students questioned on the streets, you know, they don't even know who our founding fathers were. They didn't know the difference between the Civil War and the Revolutionary War. They didn't even know who we fought. You know, it's really bad. Really
right.
Bad.
But, you know, that is an opportunity with somebody like you with a broad influence to get some of your committees of safety or correspondents or committeemen, you know, to approach their school boards and bring that law to their attention and offer to provide that education. And I'd like to see it start.
Well, we're going to do even more than that. We've already put it in play, you know, concerning education and to make sure the proper education is taught. I'm not familiar or aware of any proper education anywhere. I mean, I'm sure there might be something out there, but I'm not aware of it. I haven't found it. So that's why National Liberty Alliance put that together. The proper education is really looking and understanding, being educated on our Constitution, and understanding the price that was paid for that, who the people were that brought it together, and how we're under common law, and what common law is, and the Constitution, what powers, what authority have we given to each of the three branches of government, which is the same thing within the states to a degree also. We've given them certain powers. And if you don't know what those powers are, you don't know if they're abusing it or not. I mean, they create a lot of legislations, and people get in, you know, marching right along and going along and accepting it, and most of it is not lawful because we didn't give them the authority to put that legislation in, and therein is the problem. That's the education we have to get into schools. As a matter of fact, we're looking for a couple of people, a couple of educators that'll help work with us to create... take the books that we've written here and even the courses we put together and we'll create textbooks for the schools and, you know, and I know the NCCS, they have some good stuff too, some textbooks for schools. I'd like to see them have more. As a matter of fact, at some point in time, I'll make contact and have a discussion with them on that and if they want, we'll make them into textbooks if they give us permission. But we got to get as much into the schools as possible. I know they have some, you know, for the younger grades, they have coloring books with certain information about our founding fathers and different things. But we have to get the Bible back in school. You know, that is key. There's so much work we have to do. But many hands make light work. We get enough committees of safety going and people working on it in their counties. You know, if you get here in New York, if we got 62 counties, committees of safety working in all 62 counties, then, you know, in a year or two, we will bring the entire state back under the, you know, the control of we the people and bring our education back to all our schools that's proper and so on. You know, I don't even know if they even say the Pledge of Allegiance anymore in school.
Well, we had a guy help get elected, Senator Bob Hall. He's probably the most conservative that we've ever had in Texas. And he got a bill passed in the Senate, you know, to have the Bible back in there, prayer in there, the Ten Commandments visible from the back of the room. And teachers that can talk about the Bible. Now, going back to the Constitution Week law, that's September 17th, and it goes from September 17th to the 23rd is the way it's set up. But you know, that's our introduction to, you know, getting the Constitution and all of your members getting practice on teaching it, you know, to comply with the law that's still in the books. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned getting the Bible back in school. And that's why we have to start with the Declaration, because the first sentence mentions creation and the Bible, really, the laws of nature, which is creation. The laws of nature's God is the revealed law of the Bible. And, you know, you could teach a week on just that sentence, I think. And, but, you know, and for me, I tell people, you know, I can give them a 1 minute class on the Constitution just by going over that first sentence, laws of nature, nature's God, and what Blackstone wrote and our founders all understood is that no human laws should be suffered to contradict these. So, you know, it's, and so how are the kids that we educate going to know if the laws that they will eventually be passing are constitutional if they don't know the laws that they're contradicting?
And well, you know, again, if you look at the law, is everything about law is ultimately common sense, just common sense. You know, as far as law is concerned, remember, they cannot write any legislative law. We're not under the laws of men. We're under the laws of God. So they can't write any legislation to control the behavior of the people. Zero, none, nothing can they write. Although they do, as long as people believe they have the power and the authority and they willingly go to jail when they break those laws and they don't make no stink about it, when, as long as people doing that, we'll be continued under that kind of a situation. We're under fiction. But the truth of the matter is we're under God's law. And if they want to come out after us for anything, they got to go ask the people for permission. That's the grand jury. And if they give them permission because they perceive that maybe there was a crime and that was the person that might have done it, then they send it into the court. That's the beginning of a common law process. And then you have a jury of 12 people, and they should be free, unchained. Free and independent, able to decide not only the facts but also the law and the penalty with an eye on restitution, because that's what is just. The person has to be restored that they injured, and the people have to decide that. Jail isn't necessarily the answer to everything. The government seems to think so, but that's not common law. You know, common law is really working around the jail, ultimately, unless it's an individual that can't be controlled, it's totally violent or whatever. You have to deal with that person. But anyway, when you get 12 people that is free and independent, understand their powers and authority, that we the people are the sovereigns, that we make the law. We gave the Congress certain authorities to do certain things, but, you know, if they try to put a law up and we don't like it, we nullify it because we're the final word. And when you put 12 people coming together that's free and independent and have basically the understanding of their powers and authorities, we wrote a handbook on that, and every jurist should get that handbook. But anyway, when 12 people come together and they look at the situation and they talk it over, common sense rules. You know, it's not about applying the law, it's about applying justice. And if justice and the law is in opposition to each other, we must always choose justice. And that's what the people need to understand. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more complex than that. So when 12 people come together and discuss an issue, even if someone has sort of a twisted mind and a faulty mind or whatever the case may be, eventually, you know, they could be brought around by the discussion of the other 11. You know, logic will prevail in that room, and that is the key, and that's the point to common law. But whenever that's interfered with, then that becomes a problem. But the people don't know these things, and the judge will tell them, hey, look, you get to decide the facts, but I will decide the law, and this is the law. If you find that they broke this law, and he lays it out, you have to find them guilty. That's tainting the jury. That's a crime. Yet they do it all day long. But that's where we're at, and people have to wake up. They got to get an education. We have to educate our children.
Right.
And we have to first educate ourselves.
You know, this Constitution Week law is our gift on a silver platter to start teaching. The best way to learn is to teach, but going out to these schools and offering to teach them a class. The first one that I ever took right when the Tea Party was first starting, there was a Earl Taylor that came out from the NCCS, and you also talked about the books that they have, and their main book that they have is The 5,000-Year Leap. And Earl Taylor came out, and we spent an entire day, an arduous day, going over that whole book. But it was one of two of my favorite classes that I've ever taken. So that was the first. And I would totally recommend that be offered as part of this Constitution Week, helping these school boards satisfy their requirements for taking federal money to have a program on the Constitution. So that 5,000-year leap would be one good option. The second best class, or the second class that I've had that meant so much to me was the last one that I had, and it's called Constitution Boot Camp, and it's on Vimeo now. And but it makes it really what you just mentioned about the jury and the 12, and it has to be unanimous for, you know, like a murder charge. That was an example. There's four segments to the Constitution Boot Camp class, but they gave one showing where, you know, a suspected murderer was running away from a bunch of vigilantes that were going to lynch him, and then the sheriff comes up and says, "Nope, we're not the rule of man, we're the rule of law," and he has to have a trial by his peers. And anyway, it's a really good part of that Constitution Boot Camp class. I can't recommend it enough, nor can I recommend 5,000-year leap enough, nor can I recommend NLA enough, because God, the information you have is just so prolific and profound.
We have the videos on that too, I know we have them up on Rumble, and they're probably, I know they're on our site somewhere, and I believe some of those videos are even in some of our courses, which you had spoken about, the sheriff, and they laid out the law, and the sheriff comes, they're going to lynch the guy, you can't do that, because he has to get a trial, and so on and so forth. Those videos, as a matter of fact, I think it might have been NCCS that put those videos together. I'm not sure who put that together. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the guy, Bob Hilliard's the guy that did the Constitution Boot Camp. And he got his content from the JBS and I think from the NCCS.
Okay. Yeah. As a matter of fact, you're right. It was them, the JBS, John Birch Society.
Yeah. And, I've seen... what I learned in Bob Hilliard's class, since I first took it, he just pulled the best examples that I could imagine, and he taught the principles, the ones that are most understood and that are, most important, like general welfare and commerce and trial by jury and all that stuff. But I think with this Constitution Week law, and it should be just inside the back cover of the NCCS constitutions that you have, it's in the upper part of the last page, and it'll be great for all your listeners and members, to go to their school board and say, hey, this is the law, I can help you comply with it, and offer to teach. Nobody's knowing that stuff now.
We have to get good textbooks, and like I said, we're going to be writing some ourselves. And we already have the books written. We just have to write them at different levels, and break them up in certain ways and create textbooks out of it, because we have so much stuff on our website and in our books, and I just got lots of material. And I just need some people who have a background in education to assist, and we'll put books together, and we'll get them out there at a very affordable rate, and try to bring textbooks back into school. Look, we have to get rid of this computer stuff in school. Their whole day should not be on a computer. Yeah, I understand computer skills are important, and they should have a class on computers, maybe, you know, one class a day or whatever the case may be, but it's just a subject. Let's get back to the textbooks. Let's teach children how to read books. Yeah, you can get information, you could do research on the internet, so on and so forth, but you really need a good book, and children need to go through these books. They need to learn to read. You know, how much experience you get from a book, you know? And there's a video we play. This guy gets up and talks. We played it on one of our Monday night programs once, I believe. And he gets up and talks about, you know, the great conversations and the great books. And it gets to the end with the point of the whole thing. What's the important thing is the view, okay? It's another point of view. It's a picture. For right or for wrong, because the conversations, you know, the great conversations go back and forth. There are good sides and bad sides, but, you know, they give you all the different points of view. And that gives you the opportunity to see the difference and to come to conclusions. And anybody who gets enough information on any subject matter, as long as they're getting truthful information, solid stuff, you'll figure things out and come to an understanding of what the correct solution is, or whether this is the right view or that's the right view. And sometimes we change our point of view, and that's called growth, you know. But that's what we have to get. We have to get a real serious education back into the schools. We've got to get textbooks back into the schools. And I'll tell you what, this is a difficult one. And only the parents can do this, but it starts with an education on the people to see the destruction that's taken place. Our children should not be let set so free on this internet and these smartphones. Your children shouldn't have them. They're not old enough. They're not mature enough. At some point, yeah, they can get one, and they should get one, and I guess the parent has to decide that. But these children are not mature enough to be able to handle these smartphones. And they injure each other so severely sometimes. And also, it's ruled by sociopaths. Those are the ones that really take the control and really are the highest voice on a lot of these social medias. You know, there's just a lot of immaturity, and these children just aren't stable enough to really deal with it yet. It's a tool that should not be in the hands of children. I know that's hard for people to swallow, but I truly believe that.
You are absolutely right. And cell phones and those computers in class are tools of the devil designed to destroy our republic. So, you know, and you mentioned the great books. I've purchased three sets. I gave one away to two brothers that are just utterly fantastic. I mean, they're just so smart. And when I gave them to their mom when they were still young, she broke out in tears and said, "This is going to be their education."
Well, that's the education we got to get to. We got to get to the great conversations. We got to get the Bible back into the school. We got to get the great conversations into the school. We got to get the Constitution, our founding fathers, back into the school. We have a common law, you know, and the roots of common law. All this stuff we need to get back into school. And if we fail to do that, then we're going to fail our children and we're going to fail our country.
Yeah. The only book that wasn't in the great books that is a great book is the Bible. And so the publisher, which was Encyclopedia Britannica, Mortimer Adler, and another guy, I forget his name, he was the main dude, but he said, they left the Bible out because everybody had one, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's listed in as one of the great books, but you're right, because I had purchased the great books myself many, many years ago, and that was the, and they listed a list of all the books, and the Bible was on that list, And that's it, I think, because people look at the Bible from different perspectives. They might like a particular kind of a Bible. I read Tom James. I read the King James Bible, but I also, I read other Bibles also. I have other Bibles that I look at, and sometimes I look back and forth between them, okay, to see how one puts one thing and one another thing. But I have a lot of faith in King James, mostly because of the concordances. There are two concordances that work off of King James. There's Strong's and there's Young's. And Young's even went and did a Bible, the Young's Analytical Concordance, the guy who put that together. He also wrote a Bible, took the Bible. And it's pretty much like the King James. There's not really much difference. But there are a few words here or there that he will interpret in a different way. And I was taught to read the Bible by word studies. I'd study a word throughout the entire Bible and see how God used it. And I've come to conclusions often, not a lot, but from time to time, I'd come to a conclusion that this should have been interpreted this way instead of that way. And you look into the Bible and you see maybe a word was interpreted 20 times in this English word, and then maybe twice in this English word. And sometimes those twice in those English words, if you try to put it to the other English word, it looks a little odd or something. But then when you appreciate it from the spiritual perspective, you start to say, oh, wait a second, this just revealed a heavy truth here. And so you might come to the conclusion that this might have been a better translation. And I've noticed in Young's Analytical Concordance, and then when he did the Bible, the Young's Bible, Young's translation, I noticed some of the changes that he made were the same changes that I had made in my own thinking. And so... I think it's a very good Bible, Young's translation. There's a couple of others I heard of that are good translations. Some of them are watered down, very weak. A lot of spiritual understanding and appreciation is taken out, because sometimes people feel that they have to paraphrase to make things easier. They have to water down the word to make it simpler for the individual to read. And that's a fatal flaw, in my opinion. Because at this point now it becomes a private interpretation, because you're changing the meaning of the Bible. The more important, the most important part of the Bible, ultimately, is the spiritual understanding and the moral application. That's the most important thing. Of course, the truth is there, we read the Bible not only with the parables in it. It's a book of parables. The entire life of Christ was a parable. It's what's called a historical parable. Walking on the sea, for instance, the sea identifies with the world, and he was above it. He walked above it. To sink down into the depths of sea is to sink down into hell. And so when you see that picture, when Christ comes down off the mountain and walks across on the sea across to the other side, and the disciples are on a ship on the way over to the other side, and then Peter goes out to walk on the water with Christ, and then all of a sudden he starts to sink, and he puts forth his hand and says, Lord, save me. That's all a parable. It's a big spiritual picture. The healing of a blind man is a spiritual picture of spiritual blindness. Christ heals all of us that are blind, because we're all blind until we become born again, and spiritually speaking, of course. All of this, it's just an amazing appreciation. But anyway, going back into the Bible itself being fitted inside the great works. And our entire, our educational system was built around the Bible. That guy, we've got a page on this, as a matter of fact, under today's issues, I think it is, and we also have it under a couple places, but under today's issues, Christianity and America. People should watch these. I forget this guy's name, but he lays it out so clearly. Okay, how much the Bible is in our language and our conversations and everything, and we don't even realize it because we're a Christian nation.
David Barton.
David what?
Barton.
Barton, right? Thank you. Anyway, back to you, Bob.
You're absolutely right. I'm going to have to look up that Young's translation.
I got Young's Concordance and I got Strong's Concordance, and I got that very, very early in my life when I started to read the Bible. A great Bible teacher of mine, probably one of the greatest Bible teachers of our times anyway, and he taught, you know, that when you look at the Bible, you should always take a Young's Concordance or a Strong's Concordance. He thought both of them were good, and they are good. And so I got the Young's Concordance, and I lived off the Young's Concordance for the longest time, and then someone bought me a present once, which was a Strong's Concordance. So I used to use both, and I not so much anymore because I have Bible program on the computer, but I have them both on my bookshelf here. And the Strong's Concordance, what I did find with the Strong's, that I think he was a Baptist, because there was a couple places, the only places I found issue with him was in baptism. And where Young seemed to translate it from my appreciation and thinking and understanding correctly, but the but on the Strong side, it didn't, not so much. Also, Young's had a different approach, how he focused in on trying to find your way around the Bible. You know, Strong took an approach of putting a number to everything, whereas Young's didn't have the number and focused more with really the actual letter spelling of the word. They give the Hebrew or the Greek, which, you know, you can't make heads or tails of unless you speak that language, but it also gave the appreciation into the English on how that might be pronounced, I guess. But, you know, I found that you can get a better appreciation on the breakdown of a word through that particular concordance, because he would lay out, for instance, any word you want, you'd pick a particular word, you look it up, and then you'll see that word was maybe used, you know, X amount of times in the Bible, let's say 30 times in the Bible, and 20 times it was interpreted this way into this English word, and maybe 5 times into that English word and 5 times into this English word. And then you go study that and you start to read through it and you apply your spiritual appreciation onto it as you've come to understand, be able to see spiritually in the Bible. And you start to get a real appreciation to be able to look at the Bible from that perspective. You know, where, you know, in the Strong's, it didn't have that opportunity in that way. He took a different approach. But they're both good in the sense of bringing you to an appreciation and understanding of the meanings, how God used a particular word, you know, because the Bible is its own interpreter, line upon line, precept upon precept, you know. So it is very an important book to get back into our schools for numerous reasons, you know. And morality alone is the biggest key, I think, because it instills morality into the children as they're growing up. Train up a child on how they should walk, and when they get older, they will not depart from it. That's a promise from the Bible.
That was one of my thoughts about two thoughts, but when you mentioned that teacher that you had very early, he's probably responsible for why you're doing what you're doing now.
Well, there's no doubt about it in my mind. No doubt about it in my mind.
So if we get it back into, you know, the fingers of 4-year-olds all the way through.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, that teacher, okay, if people have the opportunity, let me see, education starts here. Harmony of the Gospels, come down to the Harmony of the Gospels, okay? And he did a study in the Gospels using Mark to harmonize the Gospels. This was the very first Bible study, a real Bible study that I ever got into. It was right here. And I was so impressed by it, it's second to none. Okay, and I've looked at Harmony of the Gospels in books by other people, and they've done good jobs, but nothing like this guy did. And so this is, you know, it's all MP3s. You can go up here and listen to them. And let me see, how many is it? 280 MP3s to go through the Book of Mark, which harmonized Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
So, yeah, no, that's, and you say that's on your website?
Oh, yeah, it's under, if you go to Education Starts Here, highlight that, and you come down, it's almost towards the end, it says the Harmony of the Gospel. And you click on that, and you get a page, I wrote an introduction, and you come down to the Harmony of the Gospel, powerful.
Yeah, that'd be for vacation Bible schools. And one other thing you mentioned about the words, specific words, you know, I'm just stuck on the King James.
Me too.
And actually, tomorrow night I'm going to be seeing Jim Jordan and our
he used to be our judge. Now he's a U.S. representative. And he was totally interpreting Romans 13 wrong. And that's when I really got into looking at the different versions and how they presented Romans 13. And mm-hmm. Romans 13 is the only one that gets it right. And so anyway, I'm probably going to embarrass him tomorrow night about, you know, really what Romans 13, 1 really means. And but anyway, but talking about the words, you know, I looked up liberty in the King James Version, and it occurs 21 times. So in every one of those times is something that relates to the Constitution, the Declaration, and our laws. So I don't know. The Bible every day is what we got to get our kids doing. And even if they don't think they're religious, it's still the foundation of our law. And the only way they're going to know that foundation is if they study it. And you know, and your Young's and your Strong's concordances, you know, sound like a great way to supplement.
Oh yeah, look at the Young's and the Strong's concordances. Like I say, both of them are great. They come from a different perspective. I get more out of the Young's than I do out of the Strong's, but nevertheless, they both, you know, do the same job. And the key is looking at the word and to really have a real appreciation of the meaning sometimes. You know, when you read something and you get stuck and you're trying to figure out, I can't understand this, what's going on, it usually ends up being a key word or a key phrase within a sentence. And the rest of the paragraph is surrounded around that key point. And if you can't get that key point, then you're struggling. You're saying, I just can't get this. Why ain't I understanding this? Well, once you discover that key word or that key phrase, and then you take it, what's great, you know, I have one of the best Bible programs, you know, study programs available, and I had to go out and buy an XP computer, which I have on my desk, which I use just for my Bible program to do Bible studies, and because it doesn't work anything after, and they don't sell it no more. You can't buy that program. They destroyed that program. The people who bought that program destroyed it, and it was probably on purpose, in my opinion. But in any event, when you go and do that search on that word or that phrase, and you say, well, okay, let me see how God used this in other places, and you might have to go to visit 20 verses or 100 verses, and you go through it and read the verse and where the word is in, and you read the context that the verse sits within, and then you go to the next one and the next one, and before you know it, you start to establish a couple of different views of that word and how God uses it. And God uses certain words in one way in one place, and certain words in the same words in another place in another way. So you're looking at the mind of God, trying to figure out, well, how does it understood here? And that's when the opening comes, because then you start to see a different point of view, and you say, well, let me apply that view here, and wow, there it is, and it pops right out, and now you got an understanding. And that's the way the Bible is. The whole Bible is written that way. It's, you know, I heard a preacher just recently teach and talked about that every year, read through the Bible every year. And after 50 years, he still reads through the Bible, you know, and you could buy, there's all kinds of different programs laid out, and, you know, you get a little handbook that lays out reading the Bible in a year. As a matter of fact, in my Bible, I have reading the Bible in a year, and I could follow that program. But in any event, he said he's been reading the Bible for every year for 50 years, and he says even the 50th time that I've read it, it's like still reading a new book. I still read and find things that I never saw before. And that's how deep the Bible is, and that's how important it is. And that also gives some hope and merit to the people who don't believe yet or are trying to believe and struggling to see that consistency, that depthness, and the consistency. Because that's the other thing. You got 66 books that are consistent. There is no inconsistency there, you know. And So, again, I'm a King James person, too, I agree. I still use the Young's occasionally just to look into it to see some different ways that Young might. When I come to a verse that I'm questioning the interpretation, for instance, you know, coming from the Greek or the Hebrew into the English, and I'm struggling with it, and I'm looking for the spiritual picture, And I'll go look up in Young's and see what Young said, too. And even though right now I use a lot of Strong's because my Bible program uses Strong's. And but I still use my Young's concordance, and you know, the book.
Yep. Yeah, that's all fantastic, and I, you know, I learn something every night talking to you. One other thing, and to get off the Bible subject, but well, two other things. You know, I became a Gideon just so that I could, you know, maybe support from my fellow Gideons.
I was a Gideon for quite some time, too. I should go back to that. They used to buy the Bibles by boxes, you know. Just
Cases and cases of them. Yeah, we passed out 2,000 week before last, and we actually had two.
Well, that's a great ministry, yeah.
We actually had two public schools that we did. One of them, they were separate independent school districts. But one we went to, we were able to get into the lunchroom and spend two lunches with two different grades, seventh and eighth graders. And it was just fantastic at one of the schools because, you know, we could interact with the kids and show them our favorite verses. And then the other one, we couldn't even get on school property. We had to stand on the sidewalk, you know, beyond the grounds of the school. And, you know, that's just, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's the devil working. And, you know, trying to keep us separated, keep the word separated from their students, our students. And so anyway, that's about it. Except one thing I wanted to mention was I mentioned last week about censuring Dade Phelan, the Speaker of the House. And since then, the county just south of us, is in the process of doing just that. So, you know, if you get a good, you know, it's Rule 44, and if you get three things where they broke their oath or violated the principles of the platform, which is all biblical principles, then those guys can be censured. And the power of that is so strong that usually people end up stepping down. Our past speaker, who was supposedly the worst one we ever had, a guy named Joe Strauss, that's exactly what happened to him. And so hopefully, you know, we'll do it with this Dade Phelan. And eventually, if we keep culling the evil that's there, we'll get some good Protestants in office that understand the Bible and the importance of it and maybe save our country.
Well, there's no other way, you know. I mean, either we bend the knee to the king of the court, or we lose it all. So, okay, appreciate the call.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take our next person, last person in the queue, if anybody else wants to get in. We still have some time. So, Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Oh, when you were, Randolph's people be on the website.
When will what?
Land office, the real property office.
Oh, the information on real property. I'm going to write a paper on that because that requires a paper to be written. I haven't had time to write it, but it is instructional, and I don't know that there's any committees of safety that have come to that point. Maybe there is. I mean, we're trying to figure that out now. We're trying to work on that. I understand. I don't know if Ed is here. Is Ed here? No, Ed's not here. Eric, do you remember how many committees of safety that said that we had going right now nationwide?
I don't remember what he said, but it was higher than I thought we would have.
Okay, I think I heard the number 137, but maybe a dozen of those haven't really, or maybe even a little more than that, haven't really got, you know, really to their first meeting. But a lot of them seem to have been. So I do have to write a paper on that, on how that would be able to assist the people before they go to the you know, the different. school boards, because they do want to get the word out to the parents and to the people within that school district concerning the meeting before the board, and discuss with them what the problems are, and also talk with them about what we know the problems are as far as what they're being educated about, and get the community involved. And that'll grow. Boy, that in itself is going to grow the Committee of Safety. Every time you go to a school and you hit up each of these school districts with all the people with a letter concerning a conversation concerning their school and what they're teaching, and we're going to go to the school board and bring them under the control of the people to teach our children what we think they should be taught. So you get that conversation going, and then you go to that meeting, that's going to explode your Committee of Safety, because those people are going to join up when they see the power and the authority, the plan and what we have and how we can control that and force these people to do the right thing. So I just haven't got time to write the paper yet, but it's on my list of things to do.
Could I do that? Also use that to try to invite at least one person to start the process?
I'm sorry, can you do what with a person to start? You mean to get together to start a Committee of Safety?
Yes.
Yeah, you start with the handbook. I mean, working with the real property and that part of the process to get into the schools and get the meeting together, that's down the line a little bit. There's a lot of work to do first to create the Committee of Safety. You know, come together, make the plan, get your first seminar, express to the people, get some people to join up, have your first meeting, start meeting, going through the process, getting your charter together and all the necessary things you need to do, get together with the sheriff, et cetera, et cetera. And all that's in the handbook, and I'm sure you know that, down on under Starter Committee of Safety. If I can get my cursor here. There it is. Starter Committee of Safety, and you come down to the handbook, the video and tools, and you get your handbook on starting a Committee of Safety. Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook, right there, pop. And just follow the book. It lays out step by step what needs to be done.
Okay, like I should put it on a public notice board to get someone.
That's one of the things you might want to do. Have you found a person to partnership with yet?
No, I haven't. I could have my mom do it, since she doesn't really want to do it.
Yeah. Well, look, get a hold of Jan and get a list of people in your county and then try to connect with them. Talk with people locally, friends, neighbors, whatever, and see who's interested. Get them out to National Liberty Alliance and see if they're interested in starting a Committee of Safety. Talk to them about a Committee of Safety. And keep your eye open, because someone else might be in your county. What county are you in? You're what state?
Clackamas County, Oregon.
What county is it?
Clackamas.
Spell it.
C-L-A-C-K-A-M-A-S.
That's a difficult one. But yeah, well, look at look online and see if anything started every once in a while in your county, because then you can join in with that person. You can put your name up there if you want.
I already did. I'm the leader of the county.
Okay. All right. And it takes time, but once you get a partner, and then you get another partner, I suggest strongly you don't do anything until you have at least 6 people, a half a dozen people. And some people may want to wait till they get a dozen people, but half a dozen people that are really talking and figuring out and planning it. So once you got a half a dozen people and you make a plan, a couple of weeks later, you say, okay, let's do it and execute the plan. There's lots of ideas in the handbook.
Okay. Bye. Nope.
Okay, Ross. Thank you. Okay. Nobody else in the queue, unless someone pops in the queue in the next minute or two. We're going to close down and. It's coming close to the end anyway. We'll be a couple, oh goodness, it may be. What time is it? Hang on. Let's see. It's 10:56. It's time to close down anyway. All right. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And those who are in the course, we'll see you on Saturday. Have a good week. Thank you. Goodbye.